Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. This is BettingTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for Thursday, June 13th. I am your host, Adam Burke. This and every edition of the Bettors Box presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus up to $500 for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus up to $500 for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Monday, Thursday format here with the Bettors Box, as you know. On Tuesday, recorded a college football podcast with Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Tons and tons of shelf life on that. So if you haven't gotten to it yet, plenty of time to still do that. If you have gotten to it, well, plenty of time to refresh yourself as we get closer to the season here by listening to that once again. Whether you do it this week, next month, whenever you do it, a lot of good information there in that segment with Brad. Also talked on Wednesday with Brian Blessing of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline about the U.S. Open. Yes, it's already started, but you can look for some in-tournament wagering opportunities on some of the guys that we talked about there on that podcast. My MLB picks and tips piece updated for today over at BangTheBook.com. That is a daily update for you. Game 6 tonight previewed by Admir Aljic in the NBA Finals. We'll see if we need a Game 7. If we do, he'll be putting that preview together for us. Also rolling out our NFL season win total previews for all 32 teams. The AFC East and the AFC North were my responsibility. Those are all posted. We're getting those sporadically from our group of writers here. Told them I wanted them within the next 2 weeks. That would be Saturday. So hopefully we get a lot of them here as we head on into the weekend. Also over at BangTheBook.com, your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. We cover soccer, tennis, golf, NASCAR. There is an Xfinity Series event. I'll preview that later on today. We got a lot of good stuff going on over there. Make sure you check it out. And also make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. We got good video previews of all 8 divisions in the NFL from Brian Blessing. We do a lot of good stuff over there. And you can also listen to the podcast segments over there as well. So that makes it nice and easy for you to check that out. All right, so regular format here for our Thursday show. We'll go beyond the box score, down the lines, give you my pick for Thursday night, and then preview the weekend here. So let's go ahead and start with a look beyond the box score and recap a few series here to start things off. And I'll start up in Boston, where the Rangers took 2 out of 3 from the Red Sox. And, you know, this Red Sox team, for whatever reason, just still cannot hit that second gear. Again, they've had a lot of problems in the slugging percentage department. Did get some production from Benintendi here, Andrew Benintendi this week, hit a homer, a couple doubles, had a triple. Good to start seeing some slugging percentage at the top of the order, because that's been a dynamic missing here for the Red Sox early on in the year. Mookie Betts, only a .454 slugging. Benintendi, even with the big weekend, only up to .443. So the Red Sox aren't getting that production at the top of their order from a slugging percentage standpoint. Betts and Benintendi are both walking quite a bit. Both have very high on-base percentages. But you want to see more. You want to see more in the slugging percentage department. Maybe a sign of things to come here for Benintendi. And obviously you hope Mookie Betts starts going as well. Because when you look at the Rangers here, who are one of the surprise teams this season, I'm very impressed with what they've been able to do so far. Shin-Soo Choo at the top of the order. .284 average, .376 on base, .508 slugging percentage. Huge year for Choo. Big season for him. Carrying the load a little bit here with Joey Gallo out of the equation as well. It's very important to have that slugging percentage dynamic at the top of the order here in the current run environment in Major League Baseball. So that's something you want to factor into your handicap and something I'm going to look at a little bit more here as well. From a lineup construction standpoint, are these teams getting doubles and home runs from the top of the order? You know, it's one of those things where you don't manufacture runs as much anymore. And for Boston, their offense has been pretty good throughout the season. They have scored a lot of runs, but they're missing that second level because they're not getting those extra base hits from the top of the order. If they start to get that, then we'll see where they end up. But, you know, look, I mean, in this series, Mike Minor goes step for step with Chris Sale, basically. The Red Sox pen had some issues in games 1 and 2, pitched a little bit better in game 3 in support of Rick Porcello. But that's the thing. You know, you have to have an increased margin for error when you've got, you know, a rotation that has some holes at the back end and a bullpen that has had some occasional issues as well. The Red Sox haven't been able to do that yet. That's why they're a 500 team. Again, still kind of waiting for them to hit this second gear. We'll see if it happens here anytime soon. The Diamondbacks stayed hot. They took 2 out of 3 from the Philadelphia Phillies. They also sent Jarrod Ike off to the bullpen. He gave up 7 runs in that start against the Diamondbacks. 13 home runs combined for these two teams in Game 1. Very good pitching matchup in the series finale between Merrill Kelly and Zach Eflin. Kelly, 7 2/3 shutout. Eflin, I believe, only gave up 2 runs in his 8 innings, struck out 9, pitched very, very well. But that was a standard getaway day game. And we kind of saw a real sleepy affair between the A's and the Rays. And I'll talk about that series here in a minute. But now that we're deeper into the season, as it's getting warmer, you've got fewer off days incorporated in there for some of those weather-related situations in April and early May. We're probably going to start to see some more of these stone-cold getaway day unders because you've got just fatigue setting in. A lot of teams playing a lot of games here in a short amount of time before the All-Star break because the schedule does get condensed in the month of June. So keep an eye out for that here where I know scoring is up around the league. I know home runs are up, this and that, but I think we could start to see more of those standard getaway day games as fatigue kind of sets in for some of these teams. And, you know, we'll see what the totals market looks like if it adjusts to that. Maybe this is just some recency bias and just cherry picking some of the recent games here, but it does sort of feel like that will be the case throughout the remainder of June with some of these getaway day unders coming through. Hopefully we don't get one in the Seattle-Minnesota game that I have the over on today, but you'll obviously have to wait and see what happens with this. But I do think that you want to find reasons to bet the under in those getaway day games as opposed to chasing some of those overs. Speaking of the A's, is it time to buy them? I think we may be reaching that point. You know, Oakland last year was kind of a mediocre team early on in the season, hit a phenomenal run in the summer months, got themselves in contention for the playoffs and obviously did play that one game playoff. Kind of wondering if they're about to turn a corner here. You have to give them a ton of credit for taking 2 out of 3 from Tampa Bay in this series. They wind up going home 35-34. They had a 6-4 road trip. And look, it was a tough road trip. They played a night game in Anaheim, had a long flight out to Arlington, then had to play 4 games in 48 hours. They had travel problems leaving town on Sunday, did lose that game on Monday to Tampa Bay, but then bounced back very, very nicely to take the series. Now they go home, they host the Mariners, they host the Orioles, and because this Oakland rotation doesn't grab a lot of headlines with the exception of a guy like Frankie Montas, I don't think their lines are going to be too out of whack hosting the Mariners and the Orioles. I think it's a good buy sign on this team. Chris Davis is back. Matt Olson's been hitting ever since coming back from the hamate bone. They got 3 pretty good road starts from Tanner Anderson, Mike Fiers, and then Brett Anderson in that series against a pretty good Rays lineup. It may be time to buy the A's. They may be about ready to go on a run here. Again, when you kind of look for those watershed moments over the course of a season where a team kind of sacks up a little bit, and that was the case there for the A's in that series. Beat a very good team, hung in there against a nasty reliever in Chaz Rowe, get that Laureano Grand Slam. Sort of wonder if that was a turning point for them to polish off a winning road trip and then head home where they have a chance to pad their record a little bit with 2 bad teams and the Rays coming to town to finish up that 10-game homestand. Finally, we take a look at the Giants here as they sweep a 2-gamer from the Padres, and Chris Paddock gets sent down by the Padres. They're going to say this is to limit innings, but really it's probably just Super 2 circumvention, trying to get that extra year of control. Everybody does it. Everybody's playing the game. But I will say this for Paddock here. His last few starts have not been particularly strong. Got touched up a little bit here by a very, very poor San Francisco Giants lineup. He's had some bumps along the way here over his last 5 or 6 starts. Maybe this isn't a bad thing. Maybe they can send him down there. Again, it's largely for contract control as he approaches his arbitration years. But he can go down there and maybe work on that third pitch. And he needs a third pitch. The fastball changeup combo is very good, but hitters have been able to guess. They've been able to cheat. He needs a third pitch. I would send him down to the minors, and he'd be throwing that pitch 45, 50% of the time, whether it's a slider or a curveball, whatever they decide they want to work on with him. That's what I would do, man. Two or three starts down there, 45, 50% breaking balls. See if he can refine that pitch a little bit, come back up, see if he gets a little bit of a boost. Sort of like what the Rays did with Ryan Yarbrough. And I know Yarbrough is a little bit more experienced of a guy, but when he was down in Durham, they worked on changeup command. And he's come back and, you know, he did pitch pretty poorly against the Twins two outings ago. But really, overall, he's been much better than I think a lot of people expected. And he's even been getting some straight starts. I think that's a thing that the Padres should do with Paddock. We'll see if they do it. I doubt that they do because they'll be worried about his arm health. But I would really like to see that be the case there with him down because of, you know, really super two purposes. The Padres' pen did have a hiccup in game one. But look, again, the same flaws are still there with the Padres. I've beaten this horse to death here on the show over the last few weeks, but they struck out 19 times in this series in games started by Tyler Beattie and Sean Anderson, who, you know, Beattie's seen an increase in the strikeout rate here, but really, you know, kind of disappointing in terms of his K numbers with the stuff that he has. Sean Anderson is a pitch to contact guy. Yes, the Giants' pen is very strong, but still 19 strikeouts in two games here for the Padres. That's a big problem for them. They're such a low on-base percentage team that they can't afford to have so much difficulty putting balls in play. Again, I think it does hurt them even more as this season goes along. You look at the Giants, and they do have a very good bullpen, but they've been outscored 65-19 in the first inning. They've been outscored 132-54 in the first three innings. So the Giants are just not getting the starting pitching that they need, and they're not getting a whole lot of offense early on in games either. But I will say this. You can get some live betting opportunities on the Giants if they do score early in the game and have a lead to protect, or if it's a close game in the middle and late innings, because their bullpen is definitely a weapon, at least for as long as those guys are still there, like a Tony Watson, like a Will Smith, like a Sam Dyson. All three of those guys could very well be traded here. So the Giants are really going to take a dramatic step back once they make those bullpen trades. For now, they still have one of the game's top bullpens, and you do want to look to take advantage of that as often as you can. So if you subscribe to the notes, and you can do that, adam@bangthebook.com, I've listed all of the first five records for the teams here so far this season, and I've highlighted some that I'm going to talk about on the show. I'm not going to roll through all 30 teams, especially if they're hovering around 500 or something like that. But I did want to mention some of this first five betting, and then also some live betting opportunities for you based on how these teams have fared, you know, with coming from behind, how they've fared with tie games, stuff like that. So just a handful of teams here with some first five records and some betting opportunities as the game goes along. The Astros 36-24-9 for the first five, and that's not really a big surprise, but they do have one of the best records, so I did want to mention them. Also in the best record category, the Chicago Cubs, 36-22-9 for the first five. Very impressive for them. They've gotten some very good starting pitching, and then obviously their lineup is just so, so good. Some bullpen issues, and those were definitely prevalent earlier on in the season. But again, one of the better records here from a first five standpoint. The Dodgers, 38-20-10 for the first five. Not a surprise there at all whatsoever with their starting rotation depth, which is very strong, and a good lineup as well. The Tampa Bay Rays, 40-19-8 for the first five here so far this season. 40-19-8, tied for the best record in baseball with the Minnesota Twins, who are 40-19-7 for the first five. But for the Rays here, this is really interesting to me. They are 40-19-8 for the first five. If they're trailing after five innings, they are only 2-17. So this is a Rays team that absolutely needs to play from in front. If you think that there's any question that they won't play from in front, then maybe you want to look to fade the Rays, because they have struggled with the back end of their bullpen. They have struggled a little bit hitting opposition relievers. So again, 40-19-8 for the first five, but only 2-17 when trailing after five innings. Now, some of the worst first five teams, none of these will surprise you. The Blue Jays are 18-35-13 in the first five. They have not gotten good starting pitching this year. So they've only had a lead in 18 games after the first five innings. The Giants, as I just mentioned, 17-35-13. Part of this has been the pitching. Most of it has been the offense, where they just don't score runs early in games to give themselves some leads. So 17-35-13 for the Giants. However, they do have seven wins when trailing after five innings. That's tied for second in baseball with the Dodgers and also the Pirates. So seven wins when trailing after five innings, tied for the most in baseball. The team with the most is the Texas Rangers, who've won eight games when trailing after five innings. How about the Cleveland Indians? With their starting rotation, and yes, they've been down Mike Clevinger, they've been down Corey Kluber, now Carlos Carrasco was also hurt, but Carlos Carrasco is sick. Zach Plesac has pitched well. Shane Bieber's been much better than anybody thought. Jeffrey Rodriguez had a stretch where he was pretty good. The Indians are only 21-30-15 for the first five. They were an outstanding first five bet last year. This year, they have not been a good first five bet at all, only leading 21 times after five innings in their 66 games. I will say, though, their bullpen has been very strong. When tied after five innings for those 15 games, they are 12-3. So as the game goes along, the bullpen has done well. The hitters have adjusted. So if you can get the Indians at a decent price in the middle innings when they're tied or maybe trailing by a run, something like that, they have been very good in those situations, 12-3 when tied after five innings. The Padres are just 23-32-13 for the first five, but they are 9-4 when tied after five innings. So when they're close, they have a decent chance of winning the game because of the strength of that bullpen. But again, early on in games, particularly against righties, they have not had much offensive success, hence the 23-32-13 record for the first five. The Reds are 27-25-14, but what I want to mention is that when tied after five innings, they are 4-10. So this is an offensive-based thing. Their bullpen has actually pitched pretty well this season, but their offense just hasn't done enough. So the Reds really do struggle when they're tied after five innings. Obviously, then they also don't do many comebacks when trailing after five innings. So the Reds, from a live betting standpoint, because of the ineptitude of that offense, they've had a lot of problems in close games in the middle innings. One other one I want to mention, and this one is astonishing to me, the Detroit Tigers. They're 21-34-8 for the first five. That's not the surprising part. But when they're tied after six innings, they are 6-1. When they're tied after seven innings, they are 8-2. And what makes no sense to me about this is that they've got the worst bullpen in baseball by ERA and FIP. So I would expect this to probably regress a little bit, the Tigers to get even worse than they already are. But I thought that was kind of intriguing that they are 6-1 when tied after six, 8-2 when tied after seven, with the worst bullpen in baseball by both ERA and FIP. So again, Adam at bangthebook.com to get on the notes for the show. Again, all 30 teams with their first five records listed, and then also some of those interesting things about coming from behind, struggling when tied, stuff like that. Quick exit velocity update here. Haven't given one of these in a while. In terms of 95-plus batted balls, the leader in batting average is the Colorado Rockies now at 585. Diamondbacks still up there at 584. Rangers, 565. Yankees, 559. Astros, 556. The Mariners, in case you're wondering, have dropped all the way down to seventh in terms of batting average on high-velocity contact. Your bottom feeders, not a surprise here. Giants, 485. Marlins, 491. Tigers, 492. Mets, 493. Blue Jays, 496. And the Cardinals, 498. League batting average on batted balls of 95-plus miles per hour is 528. One thing I will mention here, as you go up in miles per hour, if you go to 96-plus, 97-plus, 98-plus, et cetera, typically you go up about 15 points in batting average. So I would assume, and I didn't look at this yet, I didn't look at this here this morning, but I would assume a 96-plus exit velocity batting average, probably about 545, 543, somewhere in there. 97-plus would then be in the 560 range, stuff like that. So as you go up 1 mile per hour, you typically go up about 15 points. So 95-plus batting average is rather arbitrary of a cutoff, but still, you know, just to really illustrate that you know, hard contact is a bad thing, and pitchers that allow a lot of hard contact are going to have a much more difficult time than those that don't. As far as WOBA, weighted on base average, on 95-plus batted balls, the Diamondbacks do lead in that, 759. Mariners still second, 757, with their fly ball heavy offense. Twins, 747, leading the league in slugging percentage. Rockies, 739. Rangers, 716. The bottom teams here, 564 for the Marlins. Tigers at 593. Giants, 606. White Sox, 618. Pirates, 626. Red Sox, 629. So the Red Sox, again, showing there that they just haven't had enough success with those extra base hits on their high-velocity batted balls. But what this really is to show you here today is that there are fewer outliers, a lot more regression to the mean. The league average, 673 in WOBA on batted balls of 95+. And again, you've got, you know, one team under 80 points below that. That's the Marlins. You've got two teams 80 points above that, the Diamondbacks and the Mariners. So, again, just to illustrate that a lot of this stuff does regress to the mean here. One thing I do want to mention here, we talk about big favorites, and I think I talked about this on last Thursday's show. Big favorites of minus 180 or higher, 29-13 here in the month of June. $100 bettors only up $200. It is 74.4% since May 1st, 93-32. $100 bettors up about $2,600 there with that. So what we are seeing here is that it was slow in April. May was very good for chalk. Now in June, it's kind of leveled off a little bit here, a little bit of regression to the mean. So big favorites still profitable in the month of June, though not to the degree that they were in the month of May. And this really makes sense too. You know, I mentioned about the getaway day under angles, you know, teams playing a lot of games in short order. You've got some big division leads out there already as well. Some of those teams kind of, you know, putting it in cruise control a little bit. You know, and then of course you just have, you know, spots where some really good starters are going to get tagged from time to time. Guy like Patrick Corbin kind of struggling a little bit, stuff like that. So, you know, again, not a big surprise to see favorites do very well in May. Not a big surprise to see things level off a little bit here in the month of June. Let's go down the line. Let's talk about some line moves here dating back to Tuesday. Very heavy Jose Quintana money for the Cubs against Peter Lambert and the Rockies on Tuesday. That didn't work out. Quintana pitched okay. Didn't really work deep into the game, and then Tyler Chatwood just came and set fire to the mound for the Cubs in that one. We saw a flipped favorite scenario with Trent Thornton and the Blue Jays against John Means and the Orioles. The Steam was a loser in that one as well. You know, the Jays, like I mentioned, they could very well be the worst team in baseball, and I think it's very tough to make an argument otherwise, even with teams like the Orioles and the Marlins and some of the other bottom feeders that are out there. Tentative Paxton money came in for game two against Jason Vargas. That also lost. It was a smaller line move than you would expect for James Paxton against Jason Vargas, but with the doubleheader, quirky lineups, bullpen usage, stuff like that, only about a 15 or 20 cent move there on Paxton. Trevor Bauer money did win on Tuesday against Luis Castillo. Wasn't easy, but very good to see Bauer pitch effectively. Castillo also pitched very well. One mistake that Carlos Santana hit out of the ballpark. You know, what's really impressive here is that the Reds have just done so much, and I'll talk about this again here a little bit later in the show. They've done so much to curtail home runs and walks. It's been a very impressive pitching plan for Cincinnati this season here. You know, obviously they dodged a bullet not getting Corey Kluber with the struggles that he had and now the injury, but man, the Reds, you got to give them a lot of credit here. And even Anthony DeSclafani on Wednesday pitched very, very well against the Indians. The Indians took about 20 cents worth of line movement in that game. They didn't maximize their platoon advantages at all whatsoever. And Zach Plesac was a first-time loser there in that one. We saw fade of Zach Eflin on Wednesday, but that one, you know, it worked out. But Eflin was really, really good. So a little bit surprising that Merrill Kelly pitched as well as he did. But the market firmly against Zach Eflin there, and that one did pitch well. So usually when you see the market against a guy and then he pitches well, they're going to come back and try to fade him again. So I would expect money to come in against Zach Eflin in his next start as well. We saw very, very heavy Miles Mikolas money come in on the Cardinals against the Marlins and Jordan Yamamoto. Yamamoto pitched excellent in that game. I kind of regret not taking Miami there because that's the kind of guy the Cardinals struggle with. A right-handed guy they haven't seen before. Changes speeds a lot, good breaking ball, strike thrower. Yamamoto pitched really well. Marlins blow that one out and win 9-0. We did see some Giants money on Wednesday against Joey Lucchesi. The Giants were a winner in that one with Sean Anderson on the bump. Not really sure why there was a fade of Lucchesi other than to say that that line just probably opened a little bit too high. I don't think there's anything more to it than that. But you'll obviously see here in Lucchesi's next start next week if there was something more to it than that. So a starting pitcher change for the Blue Jays. They went with opener Derek Law instead of Edwin Jackson. That one hurt everybody who played the over in that game because the over did come through relatively easily, but the pitching change canceled a lot of bets out there. We saw a big fade of Danny Duffy, and this is what I pondered for the article. I'm pissed off at myself that I passed on it because money has come in against Daniel Norris just about every start this season. Then he goes up against the Royals here and Duffy, and money's coming in on the Tigers. That was a sign. You know, when you see a pitcher get faded start after start after start, and then all of a sudden the market's on him, there's something to that. There's something to that angle. The Tigers wound up winning a close, low-scoring game there in that one. But that's what I regret missing on. And you want to look for these context clues out there in the betting market with these guys that are bet against all the time. Then when they start to take money, you should probably be on that side. You don't want to be a steam chaser. You always want to handicap for yourself. But that's one of those clear-cut signs in the betting market that something is amiss. And Daniel Norris has been beaten around. He does not have good numbers. The market has faded him a ton. But he took money yesterday, and that was a sign. That was one of those context clues that I talk about looking for in the betting market. I didn't trust it. I should have. The Tigers did come away with the win there in that one. Here on Thursday, we're seeing a big fade of Julio Teheran. That's against the Pirates and Joe Musgrove. That game already underway here as I'm recording the show. But Musgrove, lowest left on base percentage among qualified starters. Teheran pitching really, really well over his last five or six starts. The market kind of fading extremes there with, you know, Musgrove's left on base percentage. Teheran pitching at a level that he probably can't sustain. So we did see that line move here on Thursday. Oh, one real quick one from Wednesday. Money against Justin Verlander again. I was on Verlander, struck out 15. Brewers struck out 24 times. Still found a way to win. It's like we're back in the month of April again. Anyway, on Thursday, John Gray taking money against Matt Strom and the Padres. Kind of surprised here because Nolan Arenado left yesterday's game, got hit by a pitch. X-rays were negative, but you still wonder if he'll get a day or two. I'm kind of surprised to see the market jumping in on the Rockies with Arenado's status unclear for that game. Maybe they know something that I don't. Matt Strom coming off the DL, first career appearance at Coors Field. Maybe that's why money coming in against him. But, you know, still interesting to see money coming in on the Rockies with Arenado's status a little bit in question. But my pick is from that game tonight, and I'm going to take the under 11.5. Matt Strom, very good reverse platoon splits. He's outstanding against righties. He can neutralize Arenado and Story. Then, of course, the Padres here, you know, they strike out a ton, lead the league in K percentage against righties. John Gray, for all of his warts, does have a lot of swing and miss there, can get the strikeouts, can get the called strikes. So against a swing and miss Padres lineup, I think he can get by two pretty useful bullpens in this series as well with the Padres and the Rockies. So we'll go under at Coors Field tonight, under 11.5. between the Padres and the Rockies. As we look at the weekend ahead here, I want to send a happy Father's Day shout-outs to all the dads out there. You know, obviously, a lot of us have great memories with our fathers at the ballpark or at the ball field or something like that. So if you get a chance, take your dad to a game this weekend. Get out there and enjoy what is hopefully some improving weather wherever you are. Padres and the Rockies is where I'll start. Again, Matt Strom, John Gray tonight. Cal Quantrill, Jeff Hoffman tomorrow, Eric Lauer, Herman Marquez Saturday, Nick Margavicius, Peter Lambert on Sunday. Like the under today, as I mentioned, but this is a real high variance series the rest of the way, I think. You do have a slew of right-handers from the Rockies to throw at the Padres. That's not a great thing for them typically, but Jeff Hoffman has not pitched well. Marquez doesn't pitch well at Coors Field. Lambert in his third start, we'll see how he does. Maybe a play on the Rockies on Sunday to fade Nick Margavicius. But, you know, I think this is a tough series. I don't think there'll be much that I like. Maybe there's a line move on Marquez on Saturday, but just wanted to tackle this one because these are two teams that can be pretty high variance. And you know, a lot of times I do look for the high variance teams to try and find some line value on them. I just don't know if I'm going to find it here in this series. Another four-game series here, a handful of them this weekend, actually. The Cubs and the Dodgers. John Lester, Clayton Kershaw tonight. Kyle Hendricks, Rich Hill tomorrow. Yu Darvish, Walker Buehler Saturday. Jose Quintana, Hyunjin Ryu on Sunday. That is Sunday Night Baseball. The Dodgers host the Giants on Monday. The Cubs are off, so not really any good situational spots coming out of Sunday Night Baseball. But I will say that this is an interesting series. I think the pitching matchups do favor the Dodgers overall. The Cubs are fourth in WOBA, but 10th in WOBA against lefties. Same issues that the Dodgers have. The Dodgers are 13th in WOBA against lefties. They're going to throw three lefties at the Cubs here in Kershaw, Hill, and Ryu. The Dodgers will get two lefties in Lester and Quintana. Kyle Hendricks in a great groove right now pitching on Friday, but he takes on a Dodgers team that's much better than most of the lineups he's faced. Should be a good series, you know, potential playoff preview, I guess we could say. But I don't know if I'm going to have too much activity in this series overall. Cardinals and the Mets, another four-gamer here. Jack Flaherty, Jacob deGrom tonight. Daniel Ponce de Leon and Steven Matz on Friday. Michael Wacha, Noah Syndergaard Saturday. Dakota Hudson, Jason Vargas on Sunday. I like the Mets series price here. I like it quite a bit, actually, with deGrom, Matz, and Syndergaard in the first three games. Again, keep in mind, four-game series, usually the series price only includes the first three games because a lot of times you're going to have a 2-2 split. But the Cardinals are just a lackluster team to me. I think the Mets are a positive regression candidate. Steven Matz off of a 10-strikeout performance. DeGrom and Syndergaard against right-handed heavy lineups for the Cardinals. I like the Mets here in this series. I don't like Wacha. Ponce de Leon's a little bit of a wild card. Flaherty's had his ups and downs. So I like the Mets series price here. And you know, I may come back on the Mets in another game here in this series if the lines look favorable enough, especially for Saturday and Sunday's game, or Friday and Saturday's games. The Brewers and the Giants. Zach Davies, Drew Pomeranz in the first one, and this one's fascinating. Drew Pomeranz, 398 WOBA, 353 ex-WOBA, one of the biggest gaps between WOBA and ex-WOBA on the positive regression side. Does he take some money in this start? Because Zach Davies is a regression candidate from an ERA to FIP standpoint. You may want to fire on the Giants tonight on the overnight line, get ahead of this line move, then decide if you do want to trust Pomeranz in this spot or not. It is a long trip west for the Brewers. Oracle Park, not a great park for offense. I don't know how Pomeranz will pitch here, but I can tell you that I do think money will come in on him heading into Friday's game. Jimmy Nelson, Madison Bumgarner Saturday, Matt Albers, the opener for the Brewers on Sunday against Jeff Samardzija. I will say something that could stem the tide of Pomeranz money is that the Brewers are sixth in weighted on base average against lefties. They get two of them here in Pomeranz and Bumgarner. I'm curious to see what happens with that line move on Friday because Zach Davies has taken money his last two starts, but both of them were against Jordan Lyles, and the market wanted to fade Jordan Lyles. Will the market fade Davies and prefer Pomeranz on Friday? I think it'll be an interesting one to see how Davies is viewed in the marketplace, especially because the Giants lineup just isn't very good. So I'll be watching that one very, very closely. And if Davies does take money with an ex-WOBA positive regression candidate in Pomeranz on the mound, that's going to tell me a lot as to how sustainable the market believes Davies is. So that's a really interesting line to watch for Friday night's game. Finally, one more series to tackle here, the Rangers and the Reds. Drew Smyly, Tyler Mahle on Friday, Mike Minor, Tanner Roark Saturday, Ariel Jurado and Sonny Gray on Sunday. The Rangers lose a hitter in this series going to play at a National League park, and they're already down Joey Gallo. Reds, contact management focus, as I mentioned, they've cut down on the home runs, good low strikeout rates here. Could be a good series to take the Reds, I think. Now, the problem, of course, is that they'll be a favorite on Friday with Drew Smyly and the disaster that he's been. Money has come in against Mike Minor a lot here of late. The market not really believing in his sustainability. So we should see a line move towards the Reds on Saturday. And I think we'll probably see one on Sunday as well. So I would get out in front of the line moves here on all three of these games for the Reds, then decide if you want to buy back, partial hedge, or just let your line value ride. But I do think we'll have line value in all three games here on the Reds in this series if you jump on those overnight lines. and look to get out in front of the market. A lot of good stuff this week on Bang the Book Radio. A lot of good stuff over at bangthebook.com as well. Thank you for all the support. Make sure you check everything out. And once again, happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you'll never strike out when you're in the better's box.